This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The U.S. Supreme Court issued decisions this week in several high-profile cases related to abortion restrictions and immigration regulations. The High Court also agreed to hear North Carolina's redistricting suit. And we learned this morning that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals held that Wake County's redistricting violated one person, one vote, and is therefore unconstitutional. How will these decisions affect voters in November? And the House Select Committee concluded their Benghazi investigation 2 years and $7 million later. What have we learned? And how will it affect Hillary Clinton's run for the presidency? Political junkie Ken Rudin joins me now, as he often does on Fridays. Welcome back, Ken.
We have nothing to talk about.
No, it's been kind of a quiet week.
Well, unbelievable.
What's fascinating to me, especially with these court rulings, I mean, let's start with the latest news, the Fourth District Court decision. This is another example of the state legislature interfering in local affairs by redrawing district maps and this sort of thing, and or talking about how city councils should be aligned as they are in Greensboro and Asheville. This one looked at the redistricting and said that what happened in Wake County was not lawful. And I wonder what this says, because I know there are some candidates for school board and commissioners. And again, you get this ruling and we're looking at elections in November. How often does this happen where you've got these cases that are then decided, you know, months before the election?
It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it creates complete chaos. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, think of what the federal court did with the North Carolina congressional districts earlier this year. That's why the primary for Congress was moved from March to June, because they had to redraw the lines. And now that the Supreme Court says they're going to have to take up the districts again, perhaps as early as this fall, will that put off the congressional races in November as well? So the Wake County thing is interesting in the sense that here we have just 4 months to go before the election. People are up. I mean, these decisions, these redistricting things that apparently violated the one person, one vote law.
Right.
I mean, they were drawn in 2013, 2015. And now you have, you know, in July of 2016 saying, wait a second, this is unconstitutional. It puts everything into a chaos. But as you say, the underlying thing is that the state legislature seems to love to interfere or get involved in local decisions. And, I mean, just think of the Charlotte anti-gay, the pro-LGBT ordinance that turned North Carolina into such a national uproar.
I mean, all of these, again, these kind of intrusions into local affairs have come back in one way or another, and they've certainly been taken to court. And again, questions about whether or not the state should be taking part in that. But also, you think about redistricting. I mean, we look at the districts all across the country. The reason it's called gerrymandering is because they look like these crazy salamanders. And it's legal. So when you think about what you have to do to actually violate the law, given how many crazy things are actually legal, you know, you sort of wonder if we've gotten beyond the threshold and whether or not we're going to see a pattern of this across the country, more of these kinds of cases being thrown back at the states and saying, wait a minute, you've just gone too far with this.
Well, that's a very fair point, Frank, because, I mean, yes, it is legal, but racial gerrymandering, as we saw in North Carolina, is not legal, and it's been thrown back to several states around the country. The interesting thing, and we've talked about this on your show before, is that when these districts, at least the crazy 12th district, when it was created in 1992, it was done to elect an African-American member of Congress. But as it turned out, that benefit for black voters was short-lived, because basically it shored up white incumbents and white candidates in the surrounding areas. So you know, the thought of you drawing lines just for the purpose of race is really not legal, and the courts have clearly said so.
Let's start take a look at the Supreme Court now, that Texas abortion decision. What did it say, and how is it playing out politically?
Well, you know, something first of all, I'll just say what it says. I mean, we talk about how the death of Justice Scalia really hurt the conservative movement. But you know, even if Justice Scalia were alive and assuming would have voted to support the Texas regulations against abortion, and we can talk about what it actually means. The fact is that Justice Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, voted with the so-called liberal majority, saying that it put an undue burden. I mean, they all agree. That, I mean, conservatives say, look, it put an undue burden on women trying to seek an abortion. And so this law that Texas passed I guess a couple of years ago, the one that the famous Wendy Davis filibuster that drew national attention, it basically reduced the number of abortion clinics in Texas from like 49 to like 19. And the reason it did so is because they put so many restrictions on abortion clinics, and they had to match up with surgical hospitals and clinics around the country, which was impossible. So as far as the politics of it, though, it was most interesting. Hillary Clinton said one of the reasons you must elect me is because I will have a Supreme Court that will protect the right of women to make these decisions. Donald Trump, who's been all over the map on abortion, he used to be pro-choice, now he's pro-life. A few months ago, he said that women should be prosecuted for having abortions. And, of course, the pro-life community went ballistic on that because they say their argument is not about women, it's about doctors. But Donald Trump has yet to talk about it. And so you wonder, you know, you always wonder who benefits, who really comes to the polls in greater numbers, the pro-choice or pro-life community. Right now, I have to say that it feels like the Democratic side of the argument, the Hillary Clinton side of the argument, seems to have the upper hand.
What about the immigration decision? Tell us about that.
Well, that's interesting, too. I mean, basically, the Supreme Court, it's a tie Supreme Court. There are eight members, and it went 4-4 that basically said that President Obama's decision about stopping deportation of certain people, you know, a deportation of certain people, it was a violation. It was basically an overuse of his executive authority. And so that perhaps puts Obama's entire immigration policy in jeopardy. And so one of the great legacies that Obama thought that would come out of his 8 years in office would be changing the way about deportations, and that doesn't seem to be the case. So it was a clear defeat for President Obama. He's obviously not happy about it. But again, the political ramifications, which I think are more important ultimately, are very unclear. What does it do to, like, for example, John McCain in Arizona when there's so many Latinos, the growing Latino population, voting population, which despises Donald Trump? Will that affect a John McCain? What does it do to Marco Rubio in Florida and the Republicans in Florida? So while it wasn't good news for Obama's immigration policy, it may be bad news for the Republicans in November in certain states where Latinos have very large and solid political strength.
And it can energize that kind of opposition, whereas if you are sort of anti-immigration, you feel kind of satisfied, so there's not the impetus to get to the polls in this cycle.
Right. Although on the abortion thing, though, I think both sides will be energized because obviously when it goes against your side, it may rally more. So we'll see how that affects the abortion question. I agree with you about the immigration point.
Let's talk about HB2 here in the state of North Carolina, still in the headlines. There's this draft proposal, rumors all week in this state about some kind of so-called compromise. The governor seems to be pushing for the elimination or repeal of a section of HB2 that prohibits people from suing in the courts for discriminate because they've been discriminated against. Trying to get that provision out, LGBT community has said that's not it. It's either repeal it all or not. It's a demeaning bill. It's a discriminatory bill. You're discriminating against the transgender community. Repeal it all. Governor says, well, what about if we took out this part? And nobody's taking credit for this bill. There is no name on this thing, even though a draft has been leaked to the press. It's fascinating that this bill, this kind of orphan bill, is making the rounds in the media. Nobody taking credit for it, and everybody criticizing it. And the NBA itself, the NBA has said, well, we want to see some movement on this. We've read the draft of this bill that nobody sponsors, and that wouldn't do it for us. What do you make of all this?
Well, you know, once again, I mean, again, we've talked about this a long time, too. I just think that Governor McCrory has boxed himself into a corner with a bill, the HB2, that has put North Carolina in the national headlines, not giving them good press, certainly about all the business boycotts that may be coming. And, of course, the NBA is talking about threatening to remove the 2017 All-Star game from Charlotte because of this. Civil rights and LGBT groups are saying these so-called revisions to HB 2 are hardly sufficient. As you say, it's really repeal or nothing for some of these groups. The NBA seems to agree. And right now, I mean, what seems to be on the table, I was listening to Dan Blue at a little press conference yesterday, and he said, look, really, there's nothing on the table that's satisfying us so far. And so, you know, this ultimately could decide who the next governor is because right now I see no compromise in sight.
All right. Let's take a look at national news. 8th congressional inquiry into Benghazi, $7 million. And 2 years later, what do we know?
Well, you know something. I mean, once upon a time, the Republicans, especially the Republican majority whip in Congress, Kevin McCarthy, made the political faux pas of saying that this will really hurt Hillary Clinton. Between Hillary Clinton's 11 hours of testifying before the House Benghazi Committee and the final report that we saw this week, there's nary a mention of Hillary Clinton there. And as a matter of fact, there's not much about President Obama either. There are complaints about the administration's response to what was going on in Benghazi, whether something could have been done in time, whether a lot of it was a lot about political posturing. But as far as a reaction or a problem with Hillary Clinton, I mean, I just don't see it. Even Trey Gowdy, when you listen to his press conference, I don't think he even mentioned her name. There was a Donald Trump tweet. I can't believe that the way we're responding to campaigns is talking about somebody's tweets. But Donald Trump said, well, once again, it proves Hillary Clinton is dishonest. But there's nothing I saw that is damaging to Hillary Clinton. I mean, we still have, of course, the email controversy and the FBI investigation to that. But as far as Benghazi, I mean, you can say that word over and over and over again, and a lot of people do, but I don't see it how it possibly has become a political issue. Not that anything happened there was something to be proud of,
right,
but to put the blame on Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama personally, I just don't see that as an issue.
Ken Rudin, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Check out Ken at our website, stateofthings.org, the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Comedian Dominique on Next. Stay tuned.